Welcome back to the Athletes Podcast, where we dive into the hustle, habits, and routines of each incredible high performer we feature on the show, with our goal of educating, entertaining, and inspiring the next generation of athletes. My name is David Stark, and today we feature Tommy Duquette. Born just outside of Boston, Tommy is the co-founder of Fight Camp, the company that's backed by NEA, CAA, Mike Tyson, George St. Pierre, Usher, and Left Lane Capital. He's a former USA national team member who's applying the lessons, credibility, and experiences gained from working with the world's top athletes. Fight Camp combines one of the best workouts in boxing with the best instructors in the US and the knowledge of how to properly catalyze human athletic progress by effectively leveraging the synergistic marriage of historical data and real-time performance data. Also want to give a big thanks to Cassie and Tommy for touring us around Fight Camp's facilities. It was an incredible opportunity for us to see exactly what Fight Camp instructors and trainers are doing on a daily basis and the content that they're putting out. Simply amazing. Just an hour south of Los Angeles. Highly recommend you check it out if you have the opportunity. I'm pumped for you folks to listen to the 161st episode of the Athletes Podcast that is sponsored by Rooted. With three times the electrolytes compared to sports drinks, 24 vitamins and minerals, and 9 superfoods and probiotics. You've seen me post it on my Instagram, and now I'm sharing it with you. Check out rooted.com. That's R-O-O-T apostrophe D.com. And use the code AP18, AP18, to try it out. With men's and women's options available, this will provide you with immunity, hydration, and energy to listen to this entire episode featuring Tommy Duquette on the Athletes Podcast. Here we go. Let's start off by talking about like what it's like for you, Tommy Duquette, founding this incredible brand, raising $90 million from guys who I assume are your idols and Mike Tyson.
For sure.
Maybe start off by explaining who you are, how you got into the sport. Yeah. You've got 135 fights under your belt.
136.
105 wins?
Over 100, 101.
Yeah, no big deal, hey? Yeah, like no big that, deal.
Yeah. And no, I mean, you know, back to your question, what it's like, you know, the growth of the company, $90 million, all those things. To be completely honest, like that's a shared effort with my co-founders and obviously like our team, you know, the great members of our team that we brought on over the years wouldn't have been possible without any of them. And anybody who wants to start a company, I suggest that, especially if you're a young founder, you're in your 20s, early 30s, go find co-founders that complement your skill set. And you need people to basically go to war with you, right? Because it's going to be so difficult, so much more difficult than you ever thought it was going to be. So you need some killers with you for sure.
It's such a grind. It's kind of similar to sports though, right? Like you put in so many hours at a young age, at whatever age, and progress isn't necessarily linear. What was it like for you, 12 years old? I know you started, were introduced to the sport. Let's maybe start there and how you came to be who you are today, going from athlete to entrepreneur, still training hundreds of people, hundreds of thousands, through the app.
No, I mean, so 12 years old. I mean, even when I was 12 years old, before I started boxing, boxing was always like a part of my DNA. And it goes back to, honestly, my great grandfather in the 1920s. He was a professional boxer. He fought for the, he fought for a fight to fight for the world title. So a title eliminator fight, which he ended up losing, unfortunately. And then all of his kids boxed as well. So, you know, he taught my grandfather. My grandfather fought as a professional. He's actually on the wall right over there. So we have to get some B-roll of that. And so he fought in the 50s. He was a New England professional champion. But he passed away when my mother was just a kid. So I had never met him, right? But I always knew about this story of my, you know, great-grandfather and my grandfather. And they fought. And I always felt like I was tied to the sport and there was something that I needed to do. And, you know, many years later, I was 14 years old. I went to a gym with my cousin and I went to just watch, you know, he was going to, I thought we were going to this boxing gym. I thought he was going to like fight people, right? I thought this would happen. And the trainer was just like, hey, like, what are you doing here? So I was like, oh, I came to watch. He's like, you can leave or you can grab a jump rope.
Okay.
And I grabbed the jump rope.
That's unreal. And they hooked ever since.
I mean, boxing was one of those things that I was, you know, very luckily instantly good at. And that's not the case with everything. I can tell you that from my, you know, myself. I was okay at some other sports, but with boxing, right away, I was just, it just came to me, and like the people in the gym would recognize, like, wow, this kid is like, you're fast. Like you can do this. Like, and I think that feedback from those people, like the older guys in the gym or the people who have been doing it for a while, really fueled my ambition in the sport. Like really wanted to made me want to keep coming back.
Mm. Yeah. Who were, other than your grandfather, your great grandfather, I'm assuming your parents were involved in like getting you into the sport, but who were those idols, those athletes that you looked up to that were like, those are, I want to try and emulate what they've got going?
Interesting. Man, I don't know if there were a lot of athletes that I looked up to that got me into boxing. I mean, I loved sports when I was a kid. I'm from Boston.
Yeah.
I would watch, when I was a kid, Pedro Martinez was pitching for the Red Sox.
Okay.
It was just lights out.
Yeah.
Right? He's the most dominant, one of the most dominant athletes of our lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people don't realize that. But Pedro Martinez, was like a 4 or 5 year stretch where he'd get up there and nobody could get a hit off. He was just amazing. He almost threw the perfect game, like 3 or 4 or 5. Like there'd be like multiple games in a season where he almost threw the perfect game. I don't think he ever ended up doing it. It's crazy because a lot of pitchers have, but I still think that he's, for that 5 year stretch, the greatest pitcher of all time. And I really admired his dominance for sure. But once I started boxing, it was guys like, you know, Arturo Gatti, loved him. Mickey Ward, who I actually got to train with when I was younger. And then as I went on, I really came to appreciate the dominance and the mindset of Floyd Mayweather.
Okay.
Floyd Mayweather is one of those guys where I tell people, like, he's so confident, right? That like, I've told this story before, like God could come down on a cloud and perform miracles in front of him and everything else. And then he'd be like, you're going to lose this next fight. And he would argue him back up to the sky. Like literally God would give up and be like, all right, I guess you are going to win. He was so sure of himself. And I think that's so important to athletes that succeed, is that confidence. Mike Tyson, I actually got this, is insane. I got the opportunity to interview Mike Tyson. And there was a famous quote from that interview that I'll never forget. He says, confidence breeds success and success breeds confidence. So it becomes this very recursive thing.
I can't even imagine like the emotions going through, like you mentioned, interviewing Mike Tyson, who I assume was probably an idol growing up. Any of those guys who you're training with, biggest insights that you took from them or biggest learnings that, other than that quote that you said, were like, wow, that was a pivotal moment that changed the way I look at the sport.
I mean, it was, I'm not going to lie, it was intimidating meeting Mike Tyson. Like, you meet him for the first time, you look right in his eyes. It's like looking into the eyes of like a tiger, I swear. And all I could think about the whole time with Mike Tyson is I didn't want to mess this up.
Mm.
You know, so he's an investor in our company. But when you do deals with athletes, like there's money on the line, you know. And we wanted to get audio so that we could throw it over B-roll and run ads that would convert. So that's my job here at Fight Camp, is I lead our content team,
okay,
which includes our production team and our trainer team, our talent team. And, you know, the whole purpose of this interview, we weren't even supposed to necessarily film the interview and have the images of it. We were supposed to just get the audio, but we filmed it anyways,
okay,
which I kind of wish that we had a more official setup for it, you know, now that we look at the videos.
Like this, right?
Yeah, for sure. Even like this, we were just in a dark room. But my whole thing is like, they prepare you beforehand. They're like, Mike has very little patience.
Okay.
Don't say anything that's going to piss him off. He's probably going to sit down and lose patience within 10 minutes, you know, but he ended up sitting down with me, I think the first time for 30 minutes we talked, and the second time was over an hour.
Wow.
Over an hour. So we just get soundbite after soundbite after soundbite, then got a little bit of footage of him hitting the bag and made some killer ads.
Okay. How crazy was it watching him hit the bag?
I'm going to be honest with you. Like people, I don't think you real, like nothing prepares you to watch him hit the bag in his 50s and be that explosive still. Like, I think people watch him, they're like, oh, he still looks great for his age. But being there in person, feeling the energy from it, it was, I couldn't believe it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he still has a lot of juice.
He's one of those guys that, he was almost Elvis level popularity in his, what, early, like 19, 20 years old. He was the face of sports for years. For you to be able to now have him as an investor in your brand, working with him, interviewing him, like, does that establish that legitimacy to you for Fight Camp, for what you've built with your co-founders?
Yeah, no, I think it definitely does. I mean, look, it's great credibility, mm-hmm, when Mike Tyson invests in your company. It's a boxing company, right? it also, to me, it feels like a responsibility, right? Because now he put up his own money and we have to make sure he gets a return on that. It's Mike Tyson, you know? Like, I feel very responsible to make sure that because he's put his stamp on it and because he put his actual, you know, cold hard cash, hard-earned money, as we know, down into the company, like, we have to make this thing succeed. So it feels heavy.
What's been the hardest part about building this brand, Fight Club, Fight Camp, Fight Club? No one talks about those.
We want everybody. So that's probably the hardest part, is we want everybody to talk about Fight Camp. So spreading the word. Any consumer company, the hardest part, number one, is building something that people love. It's the mistake that most entrepreneurs make, is they have a vision for something. They're like, this is my product. It's this widget and everyone's going to love it. And they think, I'm going to put it out on the market and people are just going to buy it. And then they put it out on the market and nothing happens, right? Nobody buys it. And they're so married to this concept that they came up with in their head. It's like a sacred cow. They're like, I'm not going to tweak it at all. I'm not going to change the price. Like, I just have to make this work. I got to market it differently. So first and foremost, you really have to build something that people love. And we nailed that with Fight Camp. We really did, but not on the first try.
Yeah.
We built a separate product at first, and then we changed that product. We changed it again a million times until we found something that did hit, right? So that's definitely the hardest part. And then from there, it's finding more people like those original customers that you get that love your product. How do you scale it out? How do you spread the word? How do you grow that customer base? That's tough, especially these days in consumer. It's expensive and it's really difficult.
Yeah. Finding a hit, pun intended, right? That's the goal. Let's go. people start exercise for different reasons, whether it's being bullied, having physical, you know, desires of what they want their body to look at. I'm curious, like, what got you into health, wellness, and then wanting to start a business around that as well? Because it seems like you've been able to pivot from athlete to entrepreneur and go on the races. Like, you haven't missed a beat, frankly. How has
plenty of beats.
Okay, well, maybe we can find out those beats. Like, for you, it's, you go 136 fights, incredible boxing career, and then you're like, okay, I'm going to build a business around this passion as well. Was that the thought from the beginning?
Yes. No, definitely not. It wasn't. And I appreciate that. Like you say, an incredible boxing career. To me, it was okay. Right? I have many friends who went on to have incredible boxing careers, professional, fought for world titles, won world titles, stuff like that. But I'm proud of what I did in boxing. And I did, I think when I got to the end of it, I had done enough. And the intention wasn't to go from there and to start a boxing business. That definitely wasn't it. In fact, I can remember a friend of mine introducing me to the son of George Foreman. So George Foreman Jr., who's starting a really high-end boxing gym in Boston. And, you know, he's like, yeah, George wants to meet you about talking to, you know, about, you know, maybe taking a role here. So it was, I think I was still in school at the time at Babson. And, you know, I went and I talked to him and he showed me this huge, beautiful facility and told me it's going to be a big hit and everybody's going to love it. And I grew up in these boxing gyms that have blood all over the walls. And like, I'm looking at this. And he's like, you know, juice bar here. It was like an Equinox. And I'm like, this is really cool. I left. I remember thinking to myself, I don't see how this is going to work.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think people want to do this. And, but I was wrong. It crushed it. It's an awesome gym. It's called, Everybody Fights is the name of the gym that he founded. They have several locations and it's really cool. So my mindset wasn't that at first, but it was to be an entrepreneur. Was to start a business. That is what I always wanted to do. I always wanted to build something, or be a part of building something and, you know, sort of be my own boss. So that was definitely the mindset from the jump, but boxing wasn't it. Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. Was the plan always to go from Boston to LA?
Definitely not either. Although, like, I think everybody who grows up outside of LA, all you see on the TV is LA and how beautiful and how awesome it is. And I definitely was interested and it wasn't hard to convince me to come this way. That's for sure. Yeah.
What, growing up in Boston?
That's a good story.
Yeah. Let's hear it.
So my co-founder, so the founder CEO of Fight Camp, Khalil, he, when we first started working together, we were working together remotely and I was helping. I just started as an advisor for Fight Camp at first. I was actually chasing down a different opportunity at the time. I started as an advisor and he would ask me, you know, what would it take for you to join the company? And I'd always tell him, they're from Quebec. It's like, I'm not moving to Canada. I'm not going all the way up there. If anything, I'm going south, you know?
Okay.
I can't deal with that cold. And then They applied for an accelerator that we didn't end up getting into, and it was based in LA. Forget the name of it. And so they applied for this accelerator, and he's like, all right, if we get into this accelerator, would you come to LA? And then I was like, yeah, you might have a case there. I think yeah. I would. But eventually, we ended up applying for Y Combinator, mm-hmm. and we got into that, and that was in Northern California. And that was the winter of 2016. It was like January 1st. No, I'm sorry. It was December 31st, 2015. Started driving from Boston to Silicon Valley.
Wow.
To join Y Combinator. Yeah.
So you did the trip we just did.
Yes.
Yeah.
You guys did that?
Yeah. Toronto to LA, man.
Toronto to LA. So where's Toronto? The Toronto is north, right?
Just west of Quebec. So oh, we're, okay. yeah. So like one province
is it like
over.
In the middle of Canada?
It's Middle East.
Yeah. It's the Middle East.
It's the Middle East of Canada. That's the way I like to describe it. It gets everyone a little chuckle. Yeah, cool. I'm curious, how many times do you think you've been hit in the head?
Never.
Yeah,
I'm not sure.
I wanted to like put, I figured we could cue that one up, and I thought maybe you might have a smart reply to it, or if you'd actually thought about that number, because this is something that growing up as a hockey goalie golfer, I didn't experience getting hit in the head often. And I'm like, do you just have a mental count of how many times, or is it just a blur?
It's a blur. Yeah.
Okay. 136 fights. Any memorable ones, any stories from them that you want to share on the Athletes Podcast?
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, for me, I can say my most memorable competitive experience was towards the end of my amateur career when I qualified for the Olympic trials in 2012, mm-hmm. because I went out there to Colorado Springs, and in order to qualify for the nationals, you have to first win your area. Mm-hmm. So you win New England. That was my LBC, my region. Then after you win New England, you have to box off with the Northeast states. So New York City, New Jersey, and upstate New York had its own. And then after you won that, for some reason, Connecticut was just this rogue state. So okay. then you'd box off with Connecticut. So you get through all those steps. Then you go to the Nationals, right? And this was probably my fourth year in a row, making it out to the, the U.S. Nationals, getting through all that other stuff. And in order to qualify for the Olympic trials in that tournament, I had to win four fights in a row.
Okay.
Make it to the quarterfinals, I believe is what it was. And so the whole time they do a draw, a random draw. You're like, I just hope I get a good draw. Mm-hmm. I hope I get the tough fights at the end so that I can qualify for the Olympic trials. I hope the first few fights are easy. All right. They do the draw. The coach comes back and he's like, all right, you got a tough draw. I was like, oh man, what would I have? Day one, I was to fight a kid named Amir Aman, who went on to be I think he was ESPN's prospect of the year when he turned pro. Really good fighter, fought for world titles. They call him the Young Master. And this is one of my rivals we had fought before. Such a good boxer. So sharp. That's why I had to beat on day one. He was ranked, I think, number 10 in the nation. I was ranked number 6 or 4 in the nation at that time. And then if I beat him, the next day after I go through this war with this kid, I would have to beat this kid named Pedro Sosa, who had been ranked number 1 in the U.S. for the 4 years leading up to the tournament. And literally, he hadn't lost in the United States of America for 4 years. He only lost in international competitions.
Okay.
And it's not like he only fought a couple times a year. No, this is him fighting dozens and dozens of times a year, winning national tournaments, regional, everything, and just didn't lose. So I'm like, okay, this is a little bit tough of a draw. The first 2 days, you got this first kid who would be really hard to beat. And then the next kid who just hasn't lost. Mm-hmm. And then I got to win two more times after that. And I went out day one and I beat Amir Aman. It was a very difficult fight. I went out the next day and I literally the mentality I had was I was just I would have died before I stopped throwing punches. Because the other thing you're battling when you have somebody that, has that reputation is you're battling the judges. Their mental model is that this other dude is supposed to win. Mm. So you don't have to, you can't just beat him by a point. You have to beat him by 10 points and then they'll have you beaten him by a point. And that's what happened.
Yeah.
I just, when the bell rang, I threw punches until I felt like I was going to collapse. And then I won.
Yeah.
And then I was probably the most tired I've ever been in my life. And I went on the next day, I won the next fight, but I started feeling a little down, right? And I won the next fight and qualified. And then I had like, I think a day off before I fought again. And I ended up getting sick and I didn't know what it was. And I ended up fighting in the finals, but I lost in the finals that year. I felt terrible. I came home and I wasn't getting better. And I ended up, they told me I had pneumonia. And it was like 5 weeks before the Olympic trials too.
Whoa.
But I think what happened was it was just such an emotional dump to make that kid so much effort, so difficult that I think I gave myself pneumonia.
Yeah, your body was just, at that point, that was its pinnacle. And
And the other thing with boxing is at the lower weights, anything under heavyweight is you have to make weight. So you're constantly dehydrating yourself, starving yourself to make weight.
I can't even imagine, like, for you having to fight back to back to back, like, days concurrently. Like, guys take weeks, if not months, off between fights nowadays. Mm-hmm. What's the body feeling like other than having pneumonia? Like, after a tournament like that, you've got to be feeling some kind of way.
You're feeling hungry.
Yeah.
You want to get some food. And a lot of athletes in wrestling and boxing, just combat sports in general, they'll develop eating disorders because of this. And I, you know, definitely when I was a teenager in early 20s, I had an eating disorder. Not like, you know, you purge or do anything like that. Nothing that crazy. But after you starve yourself to make weight.
Mm-hmm.
And then after the tournament or the fight's over, whatever, like I'd lock myself in my bedroom with like Burger King, this, that, the other, and just eat until you're sick.
Yeah.
And you just do that for days until you're like, I guess I'm going to start cutting weight again. It's super unhealthy.
I can't even wrap my head around the other part of boxing is the fact that it is subjective. Mm-hmm. Like, to your point, you could still have a better fight than the other individual, and because of their ranking, they might end up getting the draw. And like in golf, in basketball, like ball goes in the hole. That's your point. You're good. Mm-hmm. You don't have judges taking a factor, and that's a variable at play. Like, how did you mentally wrap your head around that on a daily basis, knowing that I can go in this fight, perform better than the other guy, and potentially not get the victory?
It's just part of it. And in the amateur system, like, you know, I had dozens of losses, right? And you just have to be okay with that.
Mm.
Even if you're one of the best people, you lose a lot. That's why people who have those amateur records like Floyd Mayweather, I think he lost twice, you know, in hundreds of fights. Oscar De La Hoya lost three times in hundreds of fights. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Andre Ward, he didn't lose from the age of 12 up until when he retired as a professional. Guys like that, they're anomalies. They really are. But you have to be comfortable with it. It's out of your control. You just have to go in there just knowing what you control, focusing on that, and you just let the rest be, you know?
You talked about combat sports, how they've grown exponentially probably over the past decade. Like, where do you see it going? How do you see Fight Camp continuing to iterate and being a part of this growth?
I'm actually happy you asked that question, because people look at boxing fitness and then the sport differently, as if they're two different lanes, because they have been and they are. Like, a lot of people that will, you know, box for a workout won't watch boxing at all.
Mm.
And vice versa, unfortunately, because there's tons of combat sport fans that don't, either because they don't have access to it or they don't know where to access it, they don't participate in boxing fitness. Same thing for MMA. And I see Fight Camp, one of our goals, you know, it's a dream of myself and my co-founder Khalil, is that we can kind of bridge that gap a little bit. And it's funny you ask, like, we recently, we partnered with an athlete by the name of Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, and he's fighting December 3rd in the UFC. And he's fighting, I forget the name of the person, but he came out here and he filmed this 4-week program that just launched on the app this week. And it's literally just like it's a simulated version of one of his fight camps. Obviously, there's no like sparring or grappling, but it's a lot of the same exact workouts that he does planned out over weeks that we put on the app for him.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to be running TV ads
during
the UFC prelims this weekend.
No way.
With that program that we created with him. So we're going to see if we can, you know, bridge that gap.
Yeah.
And you know what it is with boxing is that it's in MMA and kickboxing, they're intimidating sports for people.
For sure.
So the people don't want to walk into those gyms where there's fighters and there's blood on the ring and on the floors and stuff like that. They think like, you know, I'd love to do this workout, but I don't know if I want to, you know, walk into one of these places. That's why Fight Camp's perfect, like, first step for a lot of people too.
Yeah. No, what I love about Fight Camp is the fact that it is welcoming for anyone. Mm-hmm. You could be 15 or 50, come in and get a fantastic workout. It's an option that's going to provide you with some skills that you can use if necessary outside of the gym as well. Right. And that's one of the things. I have a quote here from Josh Maslin, who's our website editor's brother, who's a huge MMA fan, from Miyamoto Musashi. Do you know the name? Does that ring a bell? Musashi. It's definitely Musashi.
Is that one of our members?
He's a greatest samurai, apparently.
Oh, greatest. Oh, I know Musashi. He was the Ronin.
Sure.
Yeah. So the Ronins, they were like the samurais. They kind of like, they walked alone. They made their own rules. Yeah.
Okay. So apparently he has a quote here. The true science of martial arts means practicing them in such a way that they will be useful at any time. And it follows up by saying, beyond the skills that you acquire in combat from martial arts, even with more so, there are certain life skills that come with training. Mm-hmm. Would you agree with that?
Oh, 1,000%. And this is what we really try to hammer home with Fight Camp. I think a lot of other fitness programs and platforms are all about, like, you know, lose 20 pounds in 20 days and like before and after photos and stuff like that. And yeah, you'll lose weight if you want to with Fight Camp, or you'll gain muscle. You'll definitely get in better cardiovascular shape. It's definitely a huge stress reliever. But above all else, like, our mission as a company, we say, is to inspire the fighter within. Hmm. And what do we mean by that? So, all right, any boxing movie you've ever watched, right? There's that montage scene. Like Rocky, he's training for the fight. And what happens? It's like weeks and days and weeks, and he's running up the hill. And at the beginning, what's happening? He's like running up the hill, and then he falls down. He can't make it, right? But as his little training montage goes on, he gets stronger, faster, better through his own hard work, sacrifice, starving yourself as a fighter, you know, like bleeding, going through pain, everything, right? And you get out the other end, a transformed individual. If we could do anything at Fight Camp, it's empowering people to believe that they have that kind of control over their own destiny, that they can take their life by the horns like that and transform themselves for the better. Mm-hmm. Like, the more like big names you have involved, to me, I mean, it's validation. It feels great. It's awesome. It's what you want. But then it's like you're in the big leagues, and myself and my co-founder, it's our first business,
right?
You know, and luckily we've been able to have good success so far with it. But, you know, we're really hyper conscious of wanting our investors to have a good outcome,
right?
You know, want to make sure that we give it our all and that we produce something big out of this. Yeah.
What is the desired outcome for you and Khalil? Like, long term, 10, 20, 30 years, crystal ball. What does it look like? What's the aspirations? Is it to exit? Is it to build the best boxing business in the world?
Yeah, I mean, I think we have a lot of building to do. We want to reach a lot more people. We want to bridge the gaps between the sports and offer, like, you know, the funnest, most gamified workout experience that there is, you know, and offer that to everybody. And, you know, just in terms of like the outcome, the ultimate outcome, you're at the point now where we have, like I said, these big investors. You have Mike Tyson, you have all our angel investors, you have all our employees who are vested in the company, right? And then ourselves, we just want to create shareholder value for them. And whether that means IPO eventually, whatever the outcome is, we want to make sure it's a good outcome for shareholders.
Yeah.
I know it's like such a corporate, but it's the philosophy I believe in. Like, these people put their money behind it, they put their time behind it, and they deserve for us to have that mentality towards the business.
Yeah, and it seems like you have the same passion for your business as you did for sport. And when you apply that and you have that same energy and dedication towards it, there's no reason why you can't have incredible results, for sure. Right?
Yeah. For those of you listening, if you hear any noise in the background, our garage door got stuck, and we're trying to get it unstuck as we speak right now. So we'll see what happens.
You know, boxing world's become more popular over the last decade, like we talked about. I'm curious.
Do you think so?
Yeah, dude.
I hope so.
I think for sure. For sure.
Like, you look at this wall behind us, right? And you, like, there's the Ali's and George Foreman, all these people. To me, like, I didn't live back then, obviously, but that was like the golden age of boxing when it was the most popular. It's definitely not as popular as it was back then, but I think that maybe over the past 5 years, maybe you could even thank a Jake Paul for that.
So this is what I was asking. You know? I was going to ask, like, what do you think of the Paul brothers? There's a lot of purist boxing fans who will say blank the Paul bros because they're in it for the money. They skipped having to go through the amateur route, go through all these fights. They're getting fights with guys like Anderson Silva, who they have, frankly, in a lot of people's opinions, no right to be fighting.
We beat him.
Right? Yeah. So this is what I, like, what's your take on it?
You know, I think at first I was probably one of those people. I was like, dude, what is this? Like, what's going on? I'm not a big fan of this. This years ago. But I mean, like, with Jake Paul in particular, this is a kid who dedicated his life to boxing literally for the past probably, 3-4 years? You know, I think he has a ring in his house. He trains every single day. He takes the sport very seriously. And even, you know, an elite amateur, they, you know, sometimes they're only boxing for 3-4 years. So like Deontay Wilder, who is the heavyweight champion of the world, the U.S. heavyweight champ, people don't realize this. He was only boxing for 2 years when he made the Olympic team and he won a bronze medal. Just a great athlete. 2 years. That's it.
Crazy.
And you know, the talent pool at the heavier weights, it's not as deep. It's very controversial.
Okay. Right no, now. This is good. I love it.
So you go to these national tournaments. Look, the heavyweights are all going to beat me up now. But look, you go to a national tournament, right? And there might be 100-something people at the weight that I fought at, 141 pounds, and there might be a dozen or a couple dozen at super heavyweight.
Mm.
So I think it's safe to say that the talent pool definitely isn't as deep. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know where I'm going with this other than just insulting the heavyweights, which is probably a bad idea. So we'll just leave that.
No,
it's, we'll say no. Jake Paul,
yeah,
is somebody who takes boxing very seriously, works very hard, sparring probably multiple times per week, fighting live guys and beating them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and a lot of professionals, even like people who are studs as an amateur, hundreds of fights, you know, national tournaments, Olympians, they'll turn pro and they'll fight people who they're supposed to just wipe out.
Mm.
You know, they'll fight people that aren't a challenge at all. Whereas with him, he's always fighting somebody who is a challenge.
Yeah.
You know, like Anderson Silva, that was a really risky bet.
Mm-hmm.
Anderson Silva beat Julio Cesar Chavez like 2 or 3 years ago. Now, 2 or 3 years is a lot when you're, I think he's 48 years old.
Yeah.
Right? But still, Anderson Silva is legit.
Yeah.
Check it out. We got the door.
Nice. What is your training, like workout, nutrition look like now? I mean, obviously not competing the same way that you were, but you're in good shape. Like,
I try to.
Okay, so I have a couple more questions before we wrap up. There's a quote here that I wanted to read from Michael Rivest. Does the name ring a bell?
I love Michael.
Okay.
He's my friend. I love this guy.
So he says, Duquette is everything that's good about amateur boxing. And that relationship didn't start off that way.
I thought you were going to read like a quote from like before that. That's what I thought you were going to do. That's funny. So you did some research.
I tried
it. Stories from back in the day. That's so cool.
So I'm curious, like how did you flip the script? Because there's also a quote here that you were, quote unquote, the bad student, and you became a scholar, graduating from Massachusetts Bay Community College with a 3.9 GPA. You just pictured the other students as your competition. In the corner.
That's so fun. All right. Well, Michael Rivers, he's a brilliant, brilliant guy. He's an awesome writer. And the way I met him is actually that kid, Amir Aman, that I told you I fought in the Nationals. He was like my rival. We fought all the time. So I fought him in the regionals 1 year. And Michael Rivers wrote this whole takedown story where I got a gift and the other kid was robbed and everything else. Problem, Mike, is that as he knows, like we talked about, he wasn't even there. He's just heard secondhand accounts and then he wrote the story. And look, as an athlete, you have to have a thick skin if you start to get more like notability. Back then, nobody's writing about me, like maybe the local paper where I'm from. So like, I don't know how to react to that. So then we started a war,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, commenting on it, like talking to him. But this speaks volumes to him because I was like, you know, young fighter, all piss and vinegar, you know, and he actually like extended an olive branch and we became buddies. And then later on, he ended up writing that story. And he's really just a... he's an excellent writer and he's a brilliant guy. And, you know, he's definitely, he is a, you know, something that the sport of boxing needs. I think he was writing for Ring Magazine for a little while too, which is really cool.
Yeah. What are the articles? What is the stuff that you're listening to on a daily basis? Are you keeping up in sport? Are you fully entrepreneur trying to get that? Like where are you consuming content nowadays?
Like podcasts?
Yeah.
So definitely Rogan. I listen to Rogan a lot.
Okay, okay.
Like half the people are like, yeah, the other half are like, he sucks. You know, I like Rogan. Rogan's the man. We appreciate his shout outs too. What other podcasts are we listening to, Aaron?
Logan Paul.
Yeah, okay, we listen a little bit to Logan Paul. Okay. Yeah, we appreciate it. But we get cerebral sometimes. We listen to Lex Fredman, right?
Yeah, yeah.
We love Lex Fredman. Oh, Mike Tyson hot box. And he actually is not a bad interviewer, man. Yeah. So what else? I listen to a podcast called The All In Podcast. Have you heard of that?
I have.
Entrepreneurial podcast with Chamath and David Sachs and stuff. It's awesome.
Arguably number one business podcast out there, I think.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Those guys are just such a wealth of knowledge. Like, that's part of my routine is, I think they drop it on Thursday or Friday, but when I go to the gym on Saturday, that's what I listen to in the gym.
Yeah, I love that. I have to also ask, tell me about Vinny McCauley, because he's who set up this conversation. I chatted with him. Like, he had nothing but amazing things to say about you. Is it that Boston native, just good guys, or what's going on?
No, Vinny's the man. He's one of our members. He has been for a while. And our members that we've had, you know, pre-2020, these are the people who helped us build this business. We appreciate them so much. And, you know, Vinny's also an entrepreneur, as we know. He was one of the first employees at Butcher Box, great company. And then he went off and rolled out and started a smoothie box, which I think has legs. So if you like the idea of a Butcher Box for smoothies, go to Smoothie Box, check Vinny out.
Yeah, we drank them before. Yeah. My bad. That's why we're so energized and refreshed right now, right?
100%. But yeah, no, Vinny's the man. Early user, really appreciates the product, and we appreciate him.
Okay, so what's the biggest three items that if I wanted to join Fight Camp, become a boxer, what would you say? You're like, here's three things you should go do. Should I start jumping rope? Should I get hand eye? What should I be doing?
I mean, we have you covered with Fight Camp. If you want to start boxing, you need Fight Camp. That's what I think. You know, I mean, you can look, there's other options. You can join a gym. You can even start exploring stuff just on YouTube. We have a YouTube page with tons of free content. So check out the Fight Camp YouTube page. There's tons of resources out there for boxing. But, you know, Fight Camp does a really good job of onboarding new people to the sport. So we teach you the number system, the stance, the punches for kickboxing. We teach you the kicks. And then we have these custom programs built that we call paths. So the prospect path, for example, is like a 12-week program where you come in and on day one, you'll learn the stance. And then you'll do a workout after you learn the stance and the first two punches that matches you to what you just learned. And then you'll do several workouts for, you know, a couple weeks that really reinforce the learning of just that one skill. And then we introduce you to a new skill. And we continue to do that until you learn throughout the prospect path all of the six punches. So you get some competency with them. And then we have a whole path-based system that goes. So after the prospect path, there's the contender path, and there's other paths that kind of upgrade your skills along the way too.
That's amazing. I love that because, like you said earlier, it is, or they can be intimidating sports, these combat sports, harder to get into. You don't want to go into that gym where it's super bloody, there's sweat on the floor or whatever. So it does provide an amazing alternative. And I'm very grateful to have been able to have this conversation, learn more about Fight Camp, learn more about Tommy Duquette. What's one thing that people don't know about you that you want to share with them today?
Oh, man.
If there's a way to put you on the spot right now.
Wow. All right. I didn't expect that. But no, to be honest, like, this will come as a surprise to Fight Camp members because I'm on camera all the time. I'm talking to you right now, but I'm like super shy and introverted. And the ability to talk to a camera or to do an interview or something like that did not come naturally to me at all. It was so awkward for me at first. I couldn't do it. I was petrified. But it's something that I worked on. It's like a sport. It's a skill that you can develop. So anybody like who else is like that, it is something that you can work on. You can develop that over time, get better at it. So that's definitely something that I think would come as a surprise to a lot of Fight Camp members.
I love that. You're just flexing the muscle that you've now obtained over the years. And dude, you're phenomenal. I really appreciate it. It was incredible. As you know, the way we wrap up every episode is we ask our guests what their biggest piece of advice is. Our goal here, similar to what you have, is educating, entertaining, and inspiring the next generation of athletes. With your 18 plus years of experience training, coaching, being an athlete yourself, is there one thing that sticks out that you want to share with that next gen?
I mean, definitely for like a younger athlete, right? Here's my one piece of advice, and it runs counter to what some very successful athletes have done. And to me, just like in business, if you look above us, it's one of our brand values with Fight Camp. It's speed, focus, discipline, but it's this focus and this discipline that unlock that speed. So like if you have a goal and it's like to be this champion, to us, you can't do that just by running 100 miles per hour at that goal. You have to have the discipline. You have to have the focus. You have to run in a straight line. So what I tell a lot of athletes, and this is what I did with boxing, is if you want to be a boxer, only do boxing. That's all you got to do. Right? Focus on that one goal. Don't go play football. Don't go do this other thing. If you're sure that you want to be, same thing for a football. If you want to be a football player, do that. for me, I just allowed the things that I was passionate about that I wanted to chase down, I allowed them to consume me. Completely consume me. When I was fighting, when I was boxing, it's all I did. It's all I thought about. Now that I'm, you know, a part of starting this business and a part of growing this business, it consumes me. There's not a day in the week that I don't do some kind of work, answer emails, that I don't do something to push this business forward. There's so many other things that I'm interested in. I want to learn all these different kinds of martial arts. Maybe I want to start other businesses and do other things. But for now, the goal is to grow this business to be as big as it possibly can. And all I want to do is work on this, you know?
I love that. Yeah. Focus and discipline. Focus. Yeah. What's that next martial art?
For me?
Yeah.
Oh, man. So I actually went a couple times with Aaron to do some Muay Thai.
Okay.
I don't have the flexibility yet. That was a lot of fun. I'd love to, you know, learn that. Jiu-jitsu too.
Okay. Yeah. Everyone, hey.
The jiu-jitsu to me is just like such a black box. Like I look at it and I'm like, that's the kind of thing I'll go. I'll be so frustrated that I suck at it. And then I'll want to do it so much that I won't be able to focus on other things. So I'm like not opening that box.
Yeah. It's like starting a new TV series or something. You can't do it because you get sucked in. 100%. Hey, Tommy, I really appreciate your time. Yeah. It's been an honor to have you on the Athletes Podcast here today. Where can people find you on social media so that they can start fight camp, join in, get in shape?
So at Tommy Duquette, one word on Instagram. That's all I really do. And then for fight camp, it's at fight camp, just one word. And you can learn more about fight camp at fightcamp.com. Pretty simple.
That's the episode. Thanks so much, man. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, bro.
If you're hearing this message, you've listened to the 161st episode of the Athletes Podcast featuring Tommy Duquette. And for that, we want to thank you from the bottom of our hearts. Big thanks again goes out to Cassie and Tommy for getting us connected. I also want to give a shout out to Vinny McCauley for suggesting Tommy as an athlete to showcase on the Athletes Podcast. His story is incredible, and we continue to be amazed at the incredible athletes and individuals we get to feature on this show on a weekly basis. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with someone else who may be interested in the conversation. We're always looking for incredible individuals and amazing athletes to feature on the show. Do me a favor, shoot me a message on any social media platform letting me know your favorite part of the episode. I'd love to hear from you. That's it for today. I'm David Stark, your host. Phoenix Wayland is our producer. Jordan Maslin is our website and app developer. That's it. I hope you have a great rest of your week, and we'll see you next week for another new episode. Peace.